But Charles, I happened to catch something on CNBC yesterday, and boy, was there a heated exchange about a company that basically they're short sellers, I guess we could say. And they were kind of going after another company that has been mentioned on this show before. And so I sat there and I watched the whole heated exchange, and I came up with this brilliant idea because I remember having this guest on with us back when Mike. And you were great because you recommended him. So I'm going to let you introduce our next guest, please.
Well, absolutely. I'd like to introduce my friend and colleague, John Delvecchio. He is a forensic accountant by trade. For those that remember the TV show CSI Miami, we call John the Horatio Caine of finance because he knows where the bodies are buried in the financial statements. He's the author of What's Behind the Numbers and the editor of the Forensic Investor Newsletter. So, John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Charles. Great to be here.
Well, John, okay. Like I said, I saw this heated exchange yesterday, and then I heard a really good interview yesterday afternoon as I was driving home, talking basically about being long and short in this particular market. Let's just start off with, maybe you can just let's educate the people first of all on short selling and what it's all about.
Sure. So it's a different kind of transaction than we normally engage in everyday life, where, you know, if you walk into a store, you buy something and you exchange cash for it and you take it with you. In short selling, you sell something you don't own with the hope of buying it back at a lower price and capturing the difference. And so when you sell something, you get cash for it. So if I sell one share of IBM at $150, then I get $150 cash into my account. Now, I sold that share short. If IBM falls to $100, I can buy it back for $100, and I make $50. I sold it for $150, and I bought it back for $100. So $150 minus $100 is $50. If IBM were to go to $200 a share, and I bought it back, then I would lose $50 because I sold it for $150, and I had to buy it back for $200. So the question is, why would you buy it back? Well, that's the way that you have to close out the transaction. You can't just sell something and not close out the transaction. So stocks can go down to zero. They can go up to infinity. There's a little bit of an asymmetrical risk reward there. However, no stock goes to infinity. Otherwise, you could just buy that one and sit on the beach and drink Bahama Mamas and we'd be all set. So every stock is vulnerable at some point in time. Stocks in general move 20% just totally randomly, you know, throughout the course of a year. We do a whole other layer of analysis, which we can get into and trying to identify the best one. But it generally has a bad reputation. However, there's value in keeping, you know, people honest. Otherwise, stocks could be heavily manipulated to the upside, and that's no good for shareholders either.
Well, John, you mentioned keeping people honest. So a lot of people's mental image of short selling probably comes or is pretty similar to, anyway, the TV show Billions, where there's all sorts of nefarious going-ons here, you know, corporate sabotage and insider information and briefcases full of money being left behind. I'm pretty sure you don't engage in any of that or you'd be in white-collar prison at the moment. So, I mean, how do you go about finding candidates for shorting? Now, we discussed your the Horatio Caine of finance here. You know where the bodies are buried. So why don't you go into that for us?
You didn't know that I was calling you from my jail cell?
Right. We had to get special permission from the warden.
So we use only publicly available information. There's a treasure trove out there. We rely quite heavily on SEC filings, the Securities and Exchange Commission. So every quarter and every year and whenever there's a material event, companies have to publish these documents with the SEC. And the great thing is most people don't read them because they're not exactly reading Cat in the Hat, you know. So it's kind of really have to dig through the...
There are hundreds of pages of dense legalese, usually.
Yeah, it's, you know, 80% of it might be boilerplate, but it's that one little piece of information that's, you know, really important to consume things totally the other way. So we rely entirely on publicly available information. I would say, obviously, in the hedge fund space, there have been people that have been convicted or accused of using inside information to manipulate stocks and to profit from them going up or down. That's few and far between. I don't know anybody that engages in that activity, never been involved in any product or investment fund that has done that. So I really can't speak to that, you know, personally.
Well, to show you how rare it is, when it happens, people go to jail. So it just doesn't really happen anymore.
I think short sellers have a bad reputation, and there's very few of us left anymore, by the way. Now we're in the second largest bull market.
Almost 10 years of a bull market later, it's there aren't a lot of bears left.
Yeah, and it's not so much that I'm a bear, so I'm not a permabear. I'm not necessarily always bearish on the stock market, but I am a short seller, and I got into this business during the internet boom in the mid to late 1990s, and thought that was going to be a huge disaster for shareholders. And that's when I switched over to understanding, you know, how am I going to profit from the coming collapse of the dot-com stuff. And I felt like financial statement analysis, so forensic accounting is just a fancy word for I read financial statements and dig in and really understand where the company may be generating unsustainable sources of earnings. And launched my first fund in 2002, shorted technology stocks pretty aggressively. That obviously worked out well. Went to go work for a short-only mutual fund for 5 years and started my second fund to capitalize on the collapse of the housing industry. That obviously worked out well too, and then converted that fund into an exchange-traded fund. It's traded on the New York Stock Exchange. And to a certain degree, we've run into a buzzsaw of really the Federal Reserve in November 2010 targeting asset prices, which is something that they've never really explicitly done before anyway. And so now you've got this thing, quantitative easing, and yada. I mean, you went to the London School of Economics. Did they teach you that there was such a thing as negative interest rates? I mean, I never heard of it. So,
no, that was supposed to be a theoretical impossibility.
Yeah. So, you know, in the last 6 or 7 years, you've run into things that certainly had a much bigger influence on stock prices than just fundamentals. But in a normal environment, we're not dependent on a bear market to make money shorting stocks. We don't necessarily need the market to go down quite significantly.
Well, John, one point that you've made, I've seen you make this comment in speeches, and I thought it was really good. You know, say even in a bull market, at any given time, a decent percentage, and you can tell me what that percentage is, of stocks are actually going down. So even if the market's going up, there's some sliver of the market that's always going down.
Right. So from 1983 to 2007, which was a huge secular bull market, the Russell 3000 was up about 900%, but only 25% of the stocks accounted for all the market's gains. About 20% of stocks were down 75% or more. The average stock was actually flat. So, you know, even when the wind's at your back, it's a very tough game to be long.
And guys, we're going to have to stop it right here because we're coming up against a hard break on the other side of this. The opening bells. We'll be back with more with John DelVecchio.